Running Wild with Christine, sex, success, and other slippery rabbit holes. Welcome to 2019. This is episode number 40 with Joellen Naughty. Hi, Joellen, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. And you really nailed my last name.
Yeah.
People don't usually get that on the first try. Thank you.
I honestly listened to other people introducing you to make sure that I had it right. Because I was like, I feel like it's also a play on naughty, naughty. Like, so.
And the embarrassing thing about that is that it totally didn't even occur to me. I came up with a cutesy name for my website, the whole thing. And then, like, the first conference I went to, I introduced myself and they were like, I'm sorry, your last name is actually Naughty and you're not using that. And I was like, no.
That's the funniest. Yeah. I mean, when it's your name, you just kind of like run with it. It's your name. Cool. So, for you guys listeners, Joellen was introduced to me by Steph O'Teary, whom we talked to last year about her book, A Dirty Word, which I highly recommend you pick up. And so she suggested we should get in touch. And as far as I've done my research, I'm really excited. So let's give the listeners a bit of background on you. Who are you? What do you do? What's your story?
All right. So I always like to say that, you know, like, let me do some quick math. In 2011, I woke up a married, not having sex, dissatisfied person who was like working for somebody else and just none of it worked. Yeah. And so I took my entire life and scrapped it and started all over.
Nice.
And in that, I decided that, like, I didn't know enough about sex and I really wanted to learn about sex.
Yeah.
And if I didn't know and wanted to learn and stuff, people would probably feel the same way. Yeah. So I made my site, Redhead Bedhead, to, like, share stuff I learned as I learned it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like the beginning step of how we all got here.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's like a huge, the whole scrapping your life, I'm very familiar with. Oh, welcome. This is a safe space. But it must be like a pretty big decision to be like, I don't know anything about this. I'm going to start to learn. Like, how did you go about it?
So I had spent a couple of months being like, oh, what do I want to do with my life? Yeah. Where am I going with it? And I kind of felt like I wanted to write. Actually, I knew I wanted to write. Yeah. And for some reason, I thought I was going to write historic fiction, like books set in World War II. I don't know why I thought this. And in the middle of this whole
shift,
what's happening with my life debate, I'm at an ice cream shop with a friend and we're talking about sex and guys and all this stuff. And I finally said to her, well, you know, I'd love to just sit here and talk to you about sex all night, but I have to go figure out what I'm going to do with my life.
Yeah.
And the next morning I was at work and I was working as a personal trainer at the time. And over the course of my first three sessions of the day, I figured out what I wanted to do, like the name of my website, I figured out all of this stuff and it was randomly July 3rd.
Yeah.
So I went home, I scrapped all of my plans for the 4th of July and spent it on my couch building a website.
Oh my God, that's epic.
Yeah.
And so did you just like start dating more people or like did you attend conferences about sex? Like what was your first like, I'm going to learn things?
I had been doing a bunch of, like I'd been doing some dating, but like I felt like it was really, like, I still didn't know what I was doing, so yeah. I was freaked out. And I started going to, I was living in Boston at the time, so I started going to classes at Good Vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
And I, Twitter was really this huge kind of doorway in for me. And that's how I learned about conferences. And so I started going to those over the course of the next year. And actually, somewhere in that year, I moved from Boston to Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
And as I was planning that move, I wrote this like diatribe about good sex shops and how important they are. And my site had from the beginning had a listing of like cool sex shops in the country that I would love to see. And all these people wrote to me about like, oh, well, you should see this shop and you should see that shop. And I thought, well, I'm moving across the country and don't have a job to go to. Why not? And so I did a tour.
Amazing.
And I think we went Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
And did all these sex shops in the country.
That's a pretty great vacation. Also, yeah. Probably killed your budget, because I cannot, I like forbid myself from going into sex shops.
So when you start a business, because you have like, and you have no idea what you're doing, you tend to not be afraid to do stuff. So I was like, I know people in the world get sponsorships to do things. Mm. Maybe people would do that for this thing.
Yeah.
And I reached out to something like 19 companies, and rightfully so, about 15 of them completely ignored me.
Yeah.
But a couple got back in touch with me, and in the end, Blossom Organics gave me a small sponsorship, and then the bulk of that trip was paid for by WeVibe.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
yeah,
which reminds me, I really need to upgrade my WeVibe because my remote doesn't work anymore, and it's very frustrating.
Yes.
Speaking of which, we had actually a couple episodes ago last year, Casey Murphy, who runs the Pleasure Parlor out of Portland as well. So I'm really due for a trip down to Portland at some point soon,
because
I'm not far. Okay, so that's the beginning of 2012. You're doing a road trip. You get to Portland. And then what happens?
So then I landed in a relationship with a horrible person.
Oh, those. Yes.
It was, you know, I was in this time where I was like, I don't want to settle down. I don't, you know, I'm non-monogamous, all these things. And this person just started like, but I want to move things into your house. And I want to be your only partner. And I want, and luckily, I was surrounded by actually all these friends I had just made.
Yeah, yeah.
And now my dearest friend in the world, Elle Chase, who wrote a lovely book called Curvy Girl Sex.
I follow Elle Chase on all of these social medias.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And she got me on the phone one day and said, like, Joellen, do you know the word, like, narcissist? Do you know? So basically, she started introducing me to all of that terminology.
Yeah.
And she and Ashley Manta, who runs a site called Canisexual, offered to drive up from LA and get me out of this relationship.
Oh my God.
But I managed to get out of it. But then, you know, there was all the aftermath of that. Like, I felt like I had been this badass who started this site and did all these things. And now I was questioning everything. I was full of self-doubt. And I had like a glimpse of this the year before, but this really kind of unraveled it. Mm-hmm. I have a history with depression. And depression came like roaring back, which I did not plan for when I decided I was going to be a sexy sex writer.
Funny how that happens.
I thought depression, like, you know, I thought we were done with that and I was going to be sexy and fun and that was going to be my life now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's totally how mental health works.
You know?
What do you mean? I decided.
You can't imagine my shock when I realized depression did not give a rat's ass what I had decided.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, and then from there on, do you start then to write about depression and sex right away? Or do you kind of like sit with it?
Well, I had written my first thing about it within like 2 months of starting my site. So an entire year before all of this. And I noticed, you know, at the time, very few people were reading, but I got a bunch of emails and like private messages and people who were like, oh my God, thanks for talking about this. And that kind of stayed with me. So I reached out to a site that I was writing for, actually I still write for, called Kinkly. And I said, like, can I introduce depression as a topic? And that was when, like, kind of my second, it was only my second ever piece on depression went out into the world. And the response to that one made me realize, well, a lot of people are having this experience.
Yeah.
People are being told they're not having this experience. People are being told this experience is the best you can expect with depression. All of this stuff.
Yeah.
And that was kind of when the idea for my book was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're actually having this conversation at a really timely time. So you got some good news yesterday for your book.
It's true. I signed a contract with Thorn Tree Press, who it's an amazing small publisher that they've just done work with authors I so admire, and I'm so excited to work with them, and they are going to be publishing my book in 2020.
Oh my God, that's so exciting. exciting and probably scary and daunting.
You know, it doesn't feel real yet. And because I keep having to say 2020 when I say it, yeah. I keep thinking like, how is that a real year? Like, why do I not have a jetpack? And
yeah, I mean, it's going to fly by. I don't know about you, but like 2018, I'm like, what happened? Exactly. Like so much happened.
My friends who I've been with through their book processes have said to me, like, remember when I got my deal and we said, oh, that's so long from now. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And so tell me more about the book. You've done a big survey, right? To kick things off.
So I surveyed 1,100 people.
Mm-hmm.
And at its genesis, the book was going to exist to like say to the world, this is an experience people are having. People are having sexual side effects. People are being told their sex lives don't matter. That's happening.
Yeah.
Then after the survey, I actually interviewed about 200 people. And in that, I learned kind of how much more of the story there was.
Yeah.
So the book has now evolved. So the first half of the book is like, here's what's happening for people. Yeah. The second half of the book is like, here's how you as people in relationships can navigate this, because depression has this reputation of like, it destroys your relationships, it destroys your sex life, and it totally can, but it doesn't have to by its nature.
Yeah.
What I learned, one of my like buzzwords of the year has been resentment,
mm-hmm.
because that's the thing that I like looking back at my own relationships, reading through all the, cause the bulk of the interviews were done in a way where people could like give me essay answers to questions.
Yeah.
Cause folks with depression, we are not terrific at showing up for appointments.
Yeah.
So I was looking at what everybody had written, and so much of like the people who had had good relationship experiences felt supported and felt like their partner listened and trusted them. And then the people who were like, no, it was the worst, they said like, I resented him, he resented me. And
So
I've realized we don't have the tools as a people to navigate.
That's totally it. Because like I think, you know, that's a really good buzzword, because it's not the depression that's messing up with your relationship. It's your holding on to that resentment.
It's the resentment, man. It's like relationship cancer. It gets in there and it just grows and grows and
Oh, and it's so insidious too. Like I'm thinking back to some of my former bouts of resentment, and they're so vile and strong and like bulldoze through things, but like silently. Yeah. It's very
because depression has this like killer of relationships reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I know I fell into this trap when I was on a medication and my sex drive went away. I was like, well, that's depression. That's how that happens. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of set out to make this something people could read and find their own ways around their symptoms, what they're feeling about sex. Because the other thing that drove me I was about to be like, it drove me crazy because I'm a really good mental health professional. The other thing that killed me during this process was how many articles, because we did start talking more about mental health and mm-hmm. sex and mental health, and it's been a great couple of years for that. But good God, if I read another article that tells people with depression to just do it when it comes to sex.
Yeah, and that tells anyone to just do it.
To just do it, yeah.
Oh, no, that's not how that works.
Because it's, you know, speaking of resentment, what's going to, like, what builds resentment faster than, like, you know, closing your eyes and thinking of England? Like, it's not anybody's, like, that's not the...
No.
Especially somebody who's already dealing with these feelings of like, you're not important, you don't matter. It, like,
yeah.
Shame. Telling them like, suck it up and deal. It doesn't do it.
No. And so how do you then transform this information that you gathered from everyone else? Like what process are you going through? Are you speaking to mental health professionals to come up with plans or suggestions or tools, or, you know, what's your approach to this?
Well, I realized really early on that as a, you know, sex writer with a theater degree, I could quickly find myself out of my depth here.
Yeah.
So I brought on an amazing man by the name of Stephen Biggs, who is a psychologist based in Toronto.
Yeah.
And he's been like my right-hand brain. I almost said right-hand brain. And that was a bit of a Freudian slip because, yes, like I would get ideas and I'd say to him, can I say this to people? Is this a real thing? Does this sound? And he'll say to me, well, you know, open that up a little further, or no, just say that to them.
Yeah.
And so it's been a lot of bouncing things off him, asking around for, about yeah. people's experiences. And for me, kind of luckily, mm-hmm. I got into a relationship at the beginning of this project with somebody who had never coped, like never
encountered
anybody with any mental health issues. And so we got to kind of say, well, okay, how do we do this?
Blank slate it.
Our relationship doesn't fall apart. And it's been like one of those like test kitchens.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, how does this work?
But you know what? That's awesome. Because you can actually, you know, I think part of the main thing of everything, every issue that I've discussed in my private life or on the podcast, we all boil down to one thing and one thing only, which is communication. And so if you can treat your relationship like a test kitchen, you have to talk about it. So it's kind of like the solution within the problem kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been, the timing on all of the things kind of coming together has been outstanding. And as much as I've spent the last, you know, because I started, the first survey was in 2014.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's been like 4 years. And as much as every year or so, I have a like, I should have finished it. I'm going to miss the moment. Kristen Bell's going to write a book about this topic and everybody's going to buy it. Like, I feel like everything kind of happened exactly when it needed to. And hopefully something fun's coming out of it. Yeah.
I mean, for sure something good is going to come out of it because it's already happening. But yeah, no, it's crazy how sometimes it's like the, I have a really hard time with people, you know, when you read this like new age, like how to do your life well kind of thing. And it's like, separate your work from your life. And it's like, in our case, that's kind of difficult to do. not difficult, impossible. It's exactly one and the same. So how do you incorporate the stuff that's inevitably going to happen to you as a human walking around in the wilderness with, you know, the material that you have to produce?
And it feels like, you know, my brain's always going and trying to find the like teaching moment in the thing that just happened. And there's a lot of warning my partner. There's a story that has made it into the book that is, I've talked about at several conferences, all about like us figuring out how to initiate sex.
Yeah.
And I call it the penis sommelier story. And
please,
it fits in with one of my biggest ideas about the topic, but like, it's just a cute story about my partner and his penis. And so he had to like, we had to talk about whether he was okay with me.
Yeah. Talking about his dick in front of a lot of
talking
people.
About his dick. And he was, thankfully. But yeah, it's been like kind of weaving everything together there's this educator by the name of Kate Kenfield.
Okay.
She does something called Tea and Empathy. And she's got this deck of cards that helps people talk about their feelings. It's all very cool. And she introduced a question to my life a couple of years ago for partners to ask each other, which is, you know, when a problem is going on or whatever, do you want empathy or strategy?
Yeah.
And I found that I needed to take that question and add one more option.
Yeah.
So my partner knows now to ask empathy, strategy, or distraction.
Yes.
So we occasionally, you know, while our real life is being woven into my work, we sometimes have to say, okay, now we just need to put on like American Ninja Warrior and not think and not talk about any of this for a couple of hours. Because, you got to unplug it sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is actually, I really like that third one because I feel like, I feel like empathy is like my go-to. It's, you know, vulnerability is like my favorite state of being. That's what I run on. But it's exhausting. And strategy, it takes focus. It's something that you need to do when you you have your full brain capacity. So it's kind of like heart capacity, brain capacity, and then sometimes you have neither. You're just empty.
Yeah.
So the distraction is like a really good tool. And I'm sure...
I found that if I get really amped up and I'm freaked out about something and we try to tackle it right then, it's just going to be like banging my head against a wall.
Yeah.
But if we take some time to step back, an hour later be like, oh, well, obviously I just need to do this. Okay.
Yeah. So I actually kind of really want to hear this penis sommelier story now.
So it fits into a bigger idea that I have that I love called the sexual skeleton key, right?
Ooh.
So, God, I feel like this involves so many separate ideas, but they all come together and it's great. Emily Nagoski's book, Come As You Are, is brilliant and talks a lot about the concept of responsive desire, right? So some people have desire that they really need, like a desire-y situation for it to be triggered.
Yeah.
And I feel like this can happen a lot when you're coping with depression and anxiety, any of these things. And so I tell people, find what is your sexual skeleton key. So the thing that, like, if that doesn't work, nothing's doing it.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, it sounds so silly to say, but like, if I know there's an erection in the room. And so one day we'd been coming back from a camping trip and he still had to drive 3 hours away and all this was going on. He looked at me and he was like, we're not really feeling sexy, are we? Like, that's not really going to happen. And I said to him, well, wait a minute. Can I like see it? And his exact words were like a sommelier. And long story short, it totally worked. And we had really great sex and this whole story was born.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was your response. It's just like, I just need to see it. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Let me see it. And so we've had to navigate that because I had to be like, listen, you're not allowed to just like whip it out every time I'm like on the fence. But
the double-edged sword.
Right. But it did, like, it gave me that like knowledge that for me that can be a strategy. Like, that can kind of get me somewhere.
Yeah. No, but that's incredible. And I love the humor in it too, because it's just like kind of like distracts from all of the other latent like life anxiety and like stress of situations that you find yourself in constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. And he'll be totally silly about it. He'll be like, tonight we have a 1984. Yeah.
I mean, yes. It reminds me, yesterday I was at drinks and we were talking about, I cannot find this account anywhere. Maybe it was on Tumblr, but I can't remember. I saw at some point in my life this like blog of just this guy who takes pictures of his dick but then doodles them.
Yes.
So yeah, it's just like adventures of his dick like around the world, and I'm like, that's amazing. That's a dick pic that I would like to receive. Like, I'm okay with that one if prompted, obviously. But yeah, cool. And so, what's your biggest, where are you at with the project now? Do you kind of, because I remember like 4 years into my book, I was like, oh, I cannot, like, get me away from this. I'm recording the audiobook now, and I'm like, if I have to read this page one more time, I'm going to fucking kill somebody. Are you at that point, or are you, like, re-energized?
I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle. So I have all the chapters have these personalities for me. One chapter got kind of shelved early on. So like I wrote chapters 1 through 6, but skipped chapter 3.
Yeah.
So chapter 3 is just there kind of waiting right behind me. But I think I figured out what needs to happen with it. So I'm kind of excited, but I still can't bring myself to do it. So
I know, feels.
But 7 and 8 were what I call my like big behemoth chapters, because that's where the meat of the navigating stuff content is.
Yeah.
And chapter 7 is done and chapter 8 is really close. And so I'm in this place where it does not feel real, but this book is going to be done very soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like, you know, I live in Portland and we have so many like hippie,
yeah,
hug your feelings, whatever stuff going on. And I feel like I'm going to have to find one of those, like, come to a yoga place to let go of your relationship, like, cry it out things when this book is done. Because oh, yeah. I've been with this book for 4 years.
Yeah, I yeah. totally get that. I mean, it's... I remember when mine was coming out, everyone was like, oh, is that like, are you giving birth to your baby? And that's exactly what it feels like. And the postpartum is fucking brutal. Like, yeah. It kills.
Yeah. I kind of, my partner posted about the book and about the book deal and everything. And as I was thanking him, I realized that this book has been going on almost as long as we've been together. It's yeah. like this third person in our relationship that's been here the whole time. Yeah,
And so what sorry, go ahead.
At the same time, I also keep having the like, ooh, this is the next book. Ooh,
yeah, it doesn't stop. Like we just think it will, but it doesn't. What was your biggest, so far, obviously, we're not done just yet, but what was your biggest realization, not when you decided to actually like do the survey or do the interviews, but like aftermath? Realization that kind of surprised you? Was there like one thing that you were like, oh my God, I did not see this coming out of that?
Honestly, the whole resentment and strategies for navigating relationships, like all of that was such a huge left turn for the book, because yeah. I really had conceived it as like, I will put all this down and people will be able to point to it and say, see, this happens.
It's not just me. Kind of,
yeah, exactly. I wanted to give people that like idea that lots of other people are feeling this, and that's still there. That's the first half of the book, but I did not see it coming that I would end up writing this like guidebook to navigating sex and depression and relationships. And yeah,
my God,
yeah,
yeah. And I think that it's kind of funny because it all fits in together, like you were saying at the beginning. But like your tagline on Twitter is. None of us are broken.
With sex, mental health, and how none of us are broken.
Yeah, yeah, which I love also because it resonated with reading Steph's book and Come As You Are and all that. It's like a message that's been very much like 2018 spirit in my life.
Yeah.
But did that come about from this project, or was that something that you kind of had all along?
No, when I started my site, and until 2016, the tagline on my site was saving the world from mediocre sex.
Yes.
Which was fun. But I realized midway through 2016 that what I was doing wasn't that anymore. I wasn't a place where you came to find out how to have the hottest sex. I was the sex writer whose site you show up at and go, oh, thank God. Yeah. That doesn't work for her either. Oh, thank God. She also spends all her time watching Netflix with her dog. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think for me, the None of Us Are Broken was really, you know, it was such a powerful lesson when, you know, reading Steph's book. Again, it's called Dirty Word. Pick it up. It's awesome. but it's such an easy way to introduce... Like, I think this is the most important social component of this, is like, it's such an easy way to introduce the parts that we think are broken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it opens up that space for conversations about pieces that we don't like so much of ourselves, and that we've been either taught or self-inflicting some negative, you know, feelings about them. And it's such a... I feel like inevitably when you write about sex, people just give you their broken pieces and you just are like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's true.
Where did I ask for this?
Well, and I realized in the last, God, like 5-6 years, there's been this massive evolution in the world of people who talk about sex.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what I was watching, but it was some documentary and there was a, you know, sex therapist, sex writer there, but it took place like probably around 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
And so everybody was just at this conference in normal clothing, and she was in like a corset and like everything had glitter on it and the super high heels. And she was there talking as like a sex researcher, counselor type person. And I feel like, you know, five, 10 years ago, if you talked about sex, you were expected to be a big, sexy personality who was like a show in and of yourself when you entered the room. And I went to a conference in February. I was at the Playground conference in Toronto. And like five of us were sitting in the lobby being like, my back is killing me. I'm, you know, my feet hurt. I'm in pain. I'm in a depressive episode. And that was just such a 180, because I feel like 5 years earlier, everybody would have been like, sex, sex, sexy sex. Yeah. Woo!
Yeah. And that's the thing. You're so right, because I think about my latest conversations with anyone who's got something to do within the sex industry, whether it's sex work or sex toys or, you know, fiction writing, whatever, something that is related to the realm of the wonderfully taboo topic of sex that we keep being censored about, by the way. Super happy about that. We've kind of like tapped into this, like, actually it's just like a symptom like of the rest of our lives. It's just one of the segments that for some reason we just don't talk about. And so when you start talking about it in some way, everyone just kind of like is like, oh, I can be me. I don't know if you get that feeling. Is that just me?
No, I think that's, I always say the sex positive movement started out almost like a giant temper tantrum. Ooh. And like it had to be that way. It had to be that big. It had to be that sparkly. It had to be all of those things because everything was so taboo.
Yeah.
And now I feel like we're swinging back to the place where like, we're actually doing the work to normalize it. And so you can show up in the sparkly corset if you want. And you can also show up in the sweatpants talking about how, like, you just puked all night. We've made the room for, or we're getting better at least at making the room for all the different kinds of people.
Yeah, and I think that's also really interesting that, you know, talking, for example, about asexuality is still super difficult for, and I don't find that much content about it as much as I do about sex positive, and I'm saying this in quotes, as in like, because there's definitions of sex positive that I do not agree with. Oh my God, I'm blanking on their name. There's a podcast. Oh my God, let me pull this up because I can find this rather easily. They use the term sex critical. I don't know if you're familiar.
I like that.
Yeah, because it's like with everything that we... Oh my God, what's their name? One second. They're awesome, and they have Meg John Barker. That's right. So
okay,
they are the author of Rewriting the Rules and Enjoy Sex and a bunch of other books. And so, in one of their podcast episodes, they really delved into the fact that sex positive can sometimes be super oppressive a term to asexual people. And I'm just still getting better at learning how to talk about it as someone who has a very high sex drive personally. So it's just like the entire conversation has become more and more inclusive from, you know, what you're wearing, the unsexy topics that are part of sex, and the asexual topics that are part of sex.
I always joke that I was like a massive disappointment to the city of Portland when I got here, because I would meet all these people and they'd be like, sex writer, ha ha ha, nudge, nudge. And if you want to annoy me, have your sex positivity be like, wink, wink, sex, boning. Yeah. You know, like, I can't handle it. And the thing is, you know, I've got vibrators hanging on my wall. I'm a sex writer. I'm non-monogamous. I like check a lot of the boxes. I see how people got there.
Yeah.
But being positive about sex is not sex positivity in the initial, you know, what it was supposed to be. Years ago, I heard an interview on Sex Nerd Sandra's show.
Yeah.
Where they talked about sex neutral as a term. Because we're trying to swing back from sex negative.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't neutral like more normalizing? And I did an interview years ago on a show called Sex Gets Real, where we talked about sex positivity versus sex performativity.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so pervasive, that performative aspect of all of it, because
yeah.
I still catch myself, and this is something I spend 90% of my time thinking about, I still catch myself going, why did I just do that? Like, even talking about it, not necessarily within a sex act, but, like, just by like you said, oh, you're a sex writer, no. And you're yeah. like, yes, blah, 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 flip my hair and do something outrageous. I'm like, what? Why yeah. did I just do that? That's so stupid. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'm a raging introvert. I've spent the last couple of years recovering from trauma. I would rather hang out with my dog than anybody.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people who show up to the table in this movement, they feel like they've found a home. But when people say everybody, but they don't mean you, it's really upsetting.
Yes.
Right? And so when you're somebody who is asexual, or you're just somebody who's not really loud,
yeah.
it can be really off-putting. And I know for my first couple of conferences, I was like, oh God, well, A, way too many people, I should go hide. But B, I can't hold my own in this world because mm-hmm. I'm quiet, I'm sensitive, I'm, you know, I'm never going to put on a strap on in front of a crowd and yell woo a lot. It's just not going to be me. And I think what happened was a couple of us started talking really honestly about that. And then a bunch of other people were like, dude, we can do that? We didn't know.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's, yeah. And it's so funny because it is, that's the weird part about how pervasive it is that you actually just have to give yourself the permission. But when you don't even know that it's you who isn't giving you the, like, how do you even access that part of the information?
Yeah. And it, I think it's why we need to, hold on. I think it's great that so many people are out there modeling it now because yeah. it's, you kind of don't realize it's an option until you realize it's an option, right? Like, yeah. when I decided to write about sex, I knew nothing about the world of people writing about sex. I yeah. thought it was a very novel idea.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, I would show up and, like, people would be scandalized because yeah. sex. And yeah. so when I saw there was a whole world doing it, it was like, okay, this is way easier now because it's not all on me. And I think that for a lot of people, you know, reading all of our stuff, and it can be a huge relief when they see people who sound like they feel.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's very interesting also because I find myself, I don't know if you do too, but I find myself now, I kind of have like two groups of friends. I have like my pre very loud sex stuff friends, and then my new shiny queer, non-monogamous bunch of joy that are having those conversations anyway, because when you start off from a position where you have to deviate from the norm that is set by our society, those conversations yeah. are being had. Like, you just
yeah.
have to, because the track record doesn't fit you. So you're like, fuck the track record. What do I want to do? Whereas yeah. when you are straight, monogamous, and cis, and all of the, you know, tick all the society said boxes.
Yeah.
That world is like so far removed because you don't need it right away. Like, you don't think that you need it. And now yeah. I'm having conversations yeah. about non-monogamy, about BDSM, about things that said straight friends had never talked to me about before. And it's becoming so much easier to say the things without being performative, without having to be loud, with just being like, I went on a date with a couple last night, and they're like, wow, how was that? And I'll be like, this is how I was. And the entire conversation has shifted from, like, you were saying, like, let me put on a strap on and put on a show yeah. and we can be all scandalized and that'll open up the conversation. It's like, no, we don't really need yeah. to anymore.
Yeah, for a couple of years, I felt like whenever I was hanging out with my brother and his wife, and we'd been drinking, a couple drinks in, they'd be like, so this non-monogamy thing, how does that even work? And now we've, like, turned this corner to, my partners all live far away from me.
Yeah.
And so they know my partner who lives in the Pacific Northwest, but my other partners, my brother now is just like, when are partners coming to visit? Like, yeah, we've heard about them for years. Like, Tell them to come on out and visit. You guys can stay with us. So it's like this evolution, yeah. And I feel like it feeds out to the people around us.
It totally does. And like, this is the beautiful part of it is that, you know, the conversations are at the root of it all. Like, just, you know, your awkward two drinks and talk with your brother is gonna like take some repercussions on his friends of his friends of his friends that you will never know about, you know?
Yeah. But I think, you know, they needed to have that moment of seeing that me being non-monogamous was not like every weekend at my house is a raging sex party. And it was more just like, no, I just have multiple people who I relate to. And
yeah. It's not that foreign. It's what you have, just multiply.
Exactly.
But yeah. So I do want to ask, so from your experience and your interviews and, you know, working on the book, what would you say are like two primary tools that you wish people knew who are struggling with depression themselves or a partner that is depressed or, you know, want to change the way that their sex life is affected by, quote unquote, the depression monster?
Yeah. Well, first of all, get on your partner's team. Right? Like, be on the same team with them. There's this piece of advice that one of my friends, like her great grandmother, always used to say it. And she told them, you know, when you're married, and, you know, so to any couple here,
yeah,
it's not you against each other. It's you, the two of you against whatever the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
And what can happen a lot in relationships with where depression exists is, you know, nobody wants the depression there, but the partner without the depression, like, ends up relating to the partner with the depression like they are on the team with the depression.
Yeah.
Right? And nobody wants to be on team depression. We both hate that it's air, so
yeah,
team up together and face the depression rather than, yeah.
Yeah.
Butting heads with each other.
Oh my gosh.
And I always say, like, find your own common language. So for my partner, when he didn't understand what depression looked like, felt like, any of those things, I sent him to play a video game because he likes that. And yeah, this there's a game called Depression Quest.
Oh,
where
wow.
You can go and, yeah, you can role play life as somebody with depression. Don't do it if you're in a depressive episode. I did it once. It's really bad.
Okay.
But it's like oddly realistic, and you know, it's not going to reflect everybody's experience, but they've done a beautiful job with design and sound and the whole thing to really evoke that experience.
Mm-hmm.
I also sent him comics, so I would send him I'm blanking on their names. Nope, I've lost them both.
You'll figure it out and we'll put it in the description.
Oh, Robot Hugs.
Oh, there you go.
I sent him Robot Hugs a lot, and the other one that people listening right now are screaming at me because they all know which one I'm talking about, but they've done some excellent comics that just kind of give a visual of, like, this is what it can feel like, and it helped him understand, and it gave us a language, and put us kind of more on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's super helpful. I think It's so crazy how many tools are out there. And like you were saying, like, when you start writing about sex and you don't know how much is already out there, it's the same thing with everything else. You're like, oh my God, like, I had no idea. And so it's really helpful to have a place to start.
Yeah. And somebody who did the interview had mentioned that her and her partner are sports people. So they send sports videos. She'll be like, you know, if she wants to explain how she's feeling today, she'll send a video where the guy, like, you know, three times in the same game, dropped the ball right before he made the touchdown. And and that works for them. So it really, if you can find whatever it is that works in your relationship, it's nice.
Yeah. That's super helpful. Yeah. Is there something that, we've got a few minutes left. Is there something that we haven't addressed that you really want to say to anyone listening or to me or a question or a sign off message?
Oh, goodness. Wow.
Whatever you want.
Well, you know, it's just important for people to know that depression, and really a lot of mental health issues, but depression is my topic of focus, might become a part of your relationship, but it does not, no matter what the rest of the world tells you, it does not have to destroy it, eclipse it, end it. There are tools you can use, and you can show up for each other and still have a great relationship, including a great sex life.
Yeah.
It just requires some tweaks.
Yeah. 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 Communication, as always, my dear friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not easy. It doesn't get easier, but
no,
but it's a thing.
No. And you know, I've it's actually on my site now and it's going to show up in my book and whatever, but I even keep a page of, like product recommendations, like toys, because when, you know, your medications have made you numb or not be able to have an orgasm, I found, you know, the heavy duty wand massagers can work really well. And there's a couple of toys for penises now that don't require erections.
Yeah.
They can, And so there are like, there's, it sounds like I'm like, yeah, there's ways to get around it. And it's like all talk to each other. But no, seriously, some of it is like, use this, you can have an orgasm.
Yeah. No, and orgasms are awesome. So
as somebody who I always say I have very, my orgasms are like very small surprise parties where it's like one guy with a sad Mylar balloon. Also, if you're not orgasm centric, that's cool too.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I should preface this. Like I say this in my book, like I got my first orgasm very, very late in my sexual life and still struggle to get them on my own or with anyone. Like it's not a they or it issue. It's my brain issue.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the quest is as much fun as the reward. It's like cherry on top of the cake. The cake is the fun part.
I think a thing we run into with orgasm is there's so many like big broad explanations of it. Like I was presenting once and my co-presenter kept talking about how her orgasms being like the beginning and the end of the universe and everything. And so I think a lot of people out there legitimately do not know they are having orgasms because they're having that muscle contraction, but they're like, well, no new universe, so I don't know.
It's like, you know when you sneeze and it feels good? It's kind of like that.
That's it. Like, and you've done it.
Yeah. But, no, totally. I think the more... It's funny because although this seems, it becomes so self-evident when you talk about it all the time, and then you're just reminded by something super simple, like what you've just said, that it's like... the more we talk about it, the better we do. With all of the topics aforementioned...
Yeah. I mean, because I'm never appropriate, I was taking a private session with a Pilates instructor, and they brought out this piece of equipment that you like lay over and bumps and stuff. And I looked at it and I was like, yeah, in my industry, that would be something very different. And she stopped me and she's like, wait, I have to ask. And I explained about like liberator stuff and the props and stuff. And she looked at me and she was like, but I mean, is that really necessary? And this was the moment that like got my heart. I said to her, well, you know, some people can't hold their weight in their arms, or they get uncomfortable with this, or some people have, you know, whatever issue with their body that they need the support. And she stopped and she went, oh, I guess when you think about this all the time, you think about everyone. And I was like, yeah, you do. You think about everyone and how they could all enjoy stuff. And she was so touched by this idea that
She had not checked her privilege of being able to do this without it. Yeah. No, but that's the thing. Sometimes I feel like we make such a big deal about checking your privilege as if it's something so bad. And it's like, no, like it's actually a really good thing when that happens, because that's when you realize it was there.
I mean, checking your privilege at the end of the day is really just acknowledging that there's a world of experience you don't have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, on that note, thank you so much for being on the pod today. That was so fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited to stay up to date and like keep posting all your updates about the book.
Yay.
It's going to be so fun. But yeah, in the meantime, if you guys have any questions for Joellen, please, by all means, I will be posting her website, her Twitter, her everything down in the description. I'll let us know what you guys thought. Let us know if you want us to talk about something else again, or whatever. Just let us know how you feel. And yeah, thank you again. Hope to do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yay. Okay, guys, enjoy your Friday and hope you've had some great celebrations. And I will speak to you guys next Friday. Bye. We'll be right back.